Post-Hypnotic Press presents an unabridged recording of Jennings as Usual by Anthony Buckridge, narrated by Simon Vance. Chapter 1. Message Received. There is a world of difference between a sensible hobby and a passing craze. Out-of-school activities such as carpentry or model-making have always been looked upon as worthwhile occupations calling for some degree of skill and experience. Unfortunately, the same cannot be said for those wild enthusiasms which sweep through a school like a prairie fire, a sudden urge, for example, to make spectacles out of pipe cleaners, or to construct handy gadgets from milk bottle tops and empty toothpaste tubes. As a rule, crazes of this kind do not last very long, and are soon abandoned in favour of the next prevailing fashion. But from time to time an idea will emerge which seeks to achieve the dignity of a genuine hobby. The Form 3 homemade high-fidelity telephone system was a case in point. For the first half of the Christmas term, the succession of popular crazes at Linbury Court School followed a familiar pattern. Conkers, a purely seasonal pastime, gave place to a passion for making banjos from circular biscuit tins and school rulers. This was followed by the introduction of the homemade snorkel, a simple breathing apparatus consisting of a length of rubber tubing, which enabled the wearer to remain submerged for short periods below the surface of the bathwater. The device became extremely popular, for it was found that it could be used equally well for providing a current of air beneath the bedclothes when reading by torchlight after lights out. As the mania spread, so more and more snorkels were improvised, until lockers, tuck boxes, and trouser pockets were crammed and bulging with tangled coils of flexible piping. The most successful type was the dual-purpose 21-inch luxury model, fashioned from a length of garden hose fitted with a funnel at each end. There was also an inferior brand made from the discarded inner tubes of bicycle tyres. This sort, however, was frowned upon by the enthusiast, as it tended to leak under water and to collapse completely beneath the weight of the bedclothes. Then, shortly after half-term, came the do-it-yourself telephone. As usual, it was Jennings who pioneered the latest craze, and it was Jennings, as usual, who was largely to blame for the trouble which ensued. The idea came to him just before school one Monday afternoon, as he was rummaging through the muddled contents of his desk in search of a missing exercise book. It is unlikely that the bright idea was inspired in any way by his surroundings, for Form 3 classroom was a rather dreary room decorated in two shades of green distemper. The furniture consisted of 17 ink-stained desks, a well-worn blackboard, and a cupboard with a broken latch, while pinned to the picture rail were a number of unframed watercolours painted by the members of the form during their art lessons. It was seldom, however, that Jennings allowed his enthusiasm to be dampened by the somewhat cheerless surroundings of his classroom. "You know what, Darby," he remarked to his friend, who was dredging the inkwell of a neighbouring desk, "if I was on the phone, I could ring up and ask him if he's got it in the staff room." His companion broke off in the act of harpooning a fragment of ink-sodden blotting paper with a broken nib. "Who's got what in the staff room?" he demanded. "My English book. It isn't anywhere in my desk. I think Mr. Carter must have collected them at the end of the lesson yesterday afternoon." Derbyshire creased his brow in a puzzled frown, striving to follow his friend's train of thought. It was not always easy to grasp straight away what Jennings was talking about, for his argument tended to leap from point to point like a cat on a hot tin roof. And, indeed, this air of restless activity was typical of his whole nature. An eager manner and a wide-awake look in his eyes gave a clear indication that the 11-year-old John Christopher Timothy Jennings was always ready to play a leading part in the more lively aspects of boarding school life. Derbyshire, on the other hand, was of a cautious and peace-loving disposition, though he did his best to trail along in the wake of his more impulsive colleague. What he lacked in ambition he made up in loyalty, for where Jennings led the way, Derbyshire always followed. "I don't see what you're waffling about," Derbyshire persisted, wiping his ink-splashed glasses with an off-white handkerchief. "If you think Mr. Carter's got your English book, why don't you go and ask him? That's what I shall have to do. I was only saying that I could save myself the trouble of stonking all the way along to the staff room if I could ring him up instead." Derbyshire snorted. You must be crazy. If you think the head's going to have our classroom put on the phone just to save you wearing your legs out, you must want your brains testing.
I don't mean a real telephone. I mean a homemade one, Jennings explained patiently. I read an article in an annual last holidays that told you all about it. It's ever so easy, really. All you need is a couple of cocoa tins joined together with a long piece of string.
And then what?
Well, that's all, really. You talk into one of the tins, and somebody else listens with the other one.
Derbyshire pursed his lips doubtfully.
That'd never work in a million years, he objected.
It jolly well would. The article said so, Jennings maintained. It's strictly scientific, you see. The sound waves go hopping along the string and make the bottom of the cocoa tin vibrate like machine gun fire.
The look of doubt remained on Derbyshire's face as he replaced his glasses and ran his gaze along the rows of empty desks around him.
I still say it can't be done, he said with a shake of his head. You're overlooking one big snag.
And what's that?
We haven't got any cocoa tins.
Jennings thumped his desk in mild exasperation.
But you great addle-pated clodpole, Darby, they don't have to be cocoa tins. Any old tins would do just as well.
Oh, that's not so bad.
There was a pause for thought, and then, Atkinson's got a golden syrup tin.
There you are, then. It'll be just the job.
I doubt if you'd hear much through it, though, Derbyshire went on. You see, it's still half full of golden syrup.
Of course, we could wait till he's eaten it. Well, we can't wait. When I get a supersonic brainwave, I like to get cracking straight away, Jennings said with rising enthusiasm. After all, there must be hundreds of empty tins knocking about the school. For instance,
he broke off and searched his mind for a likely source of raw material.
I know. Mr. Carter always has round tobacco tins. He's bound to let us have some empty ones. Let's go along to the staff room and ask him.
So saying, he leapt to his feet and swept the scattered possessions back into his desk in an untidy heap.
It's a pity you haven't got the telephone rigged up already, Derbyshire remarked, as he watched his friend's vain efforts to cram down the lid. Then you could ring Mr. Carter up from here.
Jennings gave him a look.
That's just what I said a few moments ago, and you said I needed my brains testing, he replied. Anyway, you're the crazy one now, because if we'd got our telephone rigged up already, we shouldn't need Mr. Carter's tobacco tins.
No, I didn't mean that. I thought you wanted to ask him about your English book.
Oh, that!
Jennings lifted the desk lid once more and pushed the top layer of books into some semblance of order. As he did so, he noticed the English book for which he had been searching. But by now it didn't seem to matter. He was far too absorbed in his new interest to bother about an exercise book, or even to remember why he had wanted it in the first place. At a brisk pace, he led the way out of the classroom and along the corridor. As he turned a corner, he almost collided with Binns and Blotwell, the youngest boys in the school, who were blocking the passage from side to side. With his hands extended before him, Blotwell was making concertina movements with a loop of cotton upon which a cardboard disc was threaded. At each jerk of his hands, the disc spun round and round, in a manner which gave the operator and his assistant intense satisfaction.
"Hey, Jennings, look at our new wheeze, copyright reserved,"
shrilled Binns at the top of his penetrating voice.
"Blotters and I are the first chaps to be the only ones to invent ye famous spinning machine. I bet this will catch on like a house on fire when the other chaps see it."
Jennings favoured Binns with a pitying smile.
"Tut, tut! Little things please little minds," he said indulgently. "Still, we can't expect much from Form Oners, can we, Darby?"
Blotwell ceased twirling his loop of cotton and bridled indignantly at this slur on what he seemed to consider was one of the greatest inventions of the 20th century.
"All very well for you to talk," he said. "I'd jolly well like to see you think of something better."
"You won't have long to wait," Derbyshire retorted. "We've got an electronic brainwave lined up already. All we need are some empty tins."
A wary look came into Blotwell's eyes.
"Empty tins of what?" he demanded suspiciously.
Jennings tapped the side of his head in a pitying manner.
"You're mad," he announced. "What are empty tins usually full of?"
"Nothing."
"There you are, then. That proves it."
Jennings turned and hurried away along the corridor. As he went, he called back over his shoulder,
"And you can put your famous craze in the waste paper basket.
Nobody will touch it with a barge.